Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com. From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech, technology worth talking about and tech help worth listening to.
Got a question about your computer, your smartphone, tablet, or the internet? Give us a call at 1-888-972-9868. Or if you're shy, you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com.
Well, this week has been kind of hectic for me. How was your week, Tom?
Well, it wasn't too bad. I got a new TV, but on the downside, my cat ran away. But then he came back, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where? How did he get out? You're on the second floor.
Yeah, that's the scary part. He jumped.
Oh, wow.
And I saw it happen. This was not a premeditated kind of jump. This was like, he's on the porch, not looking over the wall, sees a bird, and just boom. And my jaw dropped, and then I ran downstairs. And
could you see the look in his eyes? It was like, I don't care, I'm getting this bird, or like, oops, I forgot we're 20 feet off the ground.
I didn't see the look of panic. I assume there was one at some point.
Is it true?
What?
Did he land on his feet?
I didn't see the landing.
Oh, you didn't see the landing? Oh.
See, that's the thing. I just saw him jump off and then couldn't
find
him again.
That's the most important
part. Yeah, it's pretty important.
Gosh. Yeah, so, but he's okay.
He came back, he's okay.
Is he limping or?
No.
Wow.
I found him just wandering around out there like, hey, what's up? I was like, you stupid cat.
Do you have bushes in front of your place? I can't remember.
I do, but he kind of leaped out to the side.
So. Oh, okay.
I think he landed on...
Did he jump off the porch or out the window?
Off the porch.
Off the porch.
Off the side. But, like, it's kind of... There's a lot of leaves down there, you know? And I think so there was some padding. But still, he did not look. I'm like, could you please at least look before you jump 20 feet down?
That shows you the difference between cats and dogs. My grandmother had a miniature pincher, which, if you've ever seen them, they're like little deers. And he would jump four steps off the porch onto the concrete below. And, you know, he did that his whole life. And he got older. He's like 10 years old. And he jumps and he tears his ACL. Oh. So, yeah. But I can't believe he jumped off the porch.
Well, you mentioned your week was pretty hectic. What happened?
Well, I had three projects at work that were all due Friday.
Of course.
Yeah. So I was pulling 10, 12-hour days most of this week.
Ouch.
And then, of course, I got another project dropped on my lap Friday afternoon that was due, you know, Friday afternoon.
Of course. It's always an emergency.
Yeah. And this week, I've been working to get our past episodes of Deemable Tech uploaded to PRX.org, the public radio exchange, so that other public radio stations can start broadcasting our show, this one, the full-length show, and our segments that we do for Morning Edition that I'm kind of calling Ask Deemable Tech. I don't know.
Okay.
Something came up with. I've been working on that, which our producer, Sean Birch, has been a huge help in. So thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
So I started tracking the time, and I asked you guys to, so we can keep an eye on like how much time we're actually doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I started tracking my time that I work on the show. And between my day job and the time that I was working on stuff for Deemable Tech, I realized I had put in 40 hours.
Wow.
Wednesday morning.
Oh.
So I haven't even looked at the time since then, but I know I was still doing 10, 12-hour days Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I was still working on stuff for this. So I must be somewhere around 70 to 80 hours for the entire week.
That is pretty crazy, Ray, but it sounds like you're working around to some point with all this.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to get to is that, I don't know about you, but I really didn't have time to prepare for a full hour-long show this week.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some questions that were waiting for answers, so I was wondering if you wouldn't mind us recording a short episode this week.
Well, I don't mind, and I hope you guys don't mind, but if you do, send us questions and we'll be forced to do a full episode, because Ray is incredibly OCD and won't be able to handle all of those emails and voicemails just sitting there for more than a week.
It's true. Speaking of which, let's answer some questions right now. Narada asks...
Wait, Ray, you are forgetting something. Didn't we have something we wanted to tell our listeners about?
Oh, that's right. Something else that we've been getting ready for is our live event at Bold Bean Coffee Roasters.
Yes.
On Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m., we will be hosting a live episode of Deemable Tech at Bold Bean Coffee Roasters here on Stockton Street here in Jacksonville, Florida.
Now, if you want to come to our live event, we need you to act fast.
Yes.
Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/deemable and click on events and RSVP yes.
Yes.
or you can go to the event page directly at dmbl.co/DTATBB.
It's dmbl.co/DTATBB. I think deemable tech at Bold Bean.
Oh, okay. I thought that was something from the Empire Strikes Back. Sorry.
DTATBB.
That will take you directly to the live event page on Facebook. And the reason why is because Bold Bean can hold about 40, maybe 50 people with the without the fire marshal getting really upset. And we wouldn't want to crowd the place. So we're trying to get an accurate estimate for them.
Yep. So now if you are out of town or you're out of the country, yes, Jerry, I'm speaking to you. Our friend is going to be leaving soon. And you still want to come, we are working on getting a live video stream set up for the event. Now, we're not promising anything yet, but we're working on it. Obviously, if you are in Jacksonville, we want you to come in person so we can see your pretty faces.
We love to see your pretty faces.
And also, we're going to have some audience participation stuff going on, too. So this is your chance to be on the show.
On the radio.
Yep.
On the internet.
So that is February 18th at 7 p.m. at Bold Bean Coffee Roasters on Stockton Street. And how do they RSVP?
They go to the event link on our Facebook page or go directly to dmbl.co/DTABB.
DTATBB. I did not put that in the script right.
You did not.
All right. Well, now let's answer some questions.
All right.
Let's see.
We've got one from Nareda. Can you read that, Ray?
Sure. Nareda writes, I would like to be able to see what my daughter is texting with her friends. Is there an app that I can put on my daughter's phone text so that I can get an email with her text in it every day or have her text sent to me as well?
Hi, Nareda. Well, this is 2013 and smartphones are everywhere. So, of course, there is an app for that. If you're using Android, one example of an app would be PixChecker, the anti-sexting app.
What?
That's the name of the app, Ray.
The anti-sexting app?
Yes, sexting.
It literally says that on the title.
It's like the subtitle, the anti-sexting app.
Wow, what does it do?
Well, it just does actually exactly what she's asking for, but I think they're trying to tie into this sort of what I believe is possibly a fake epidemic that the media talks about, which is sexting. I don't know really many people who sexed.
Well, I mean, I know
maybe
sexting,
I'm hanging with the wrong crowd.
Sexting is like this thing that teenagers do.
Supposedly. I think some of them do.
They take pictures of themselves and send them to their girlfriends and boyfriends and send provocative texts to each other.
Sure.
So what does this app actually do?
All right. So the app, she asked if she could get emailed what her, her daughter is texting, or probably she would also like to see the picture she's taking. And that's exactly what PixChecker, the anti-sexting app, does. Despite the provocative name, basically the app says, you know, if a teen knows that mom or dad are going to see a copy of anything they send on their phone, they'll think twice about what they send.
Hmm.
And it also suggests that parents can check their teen's phone to make sure they're not being bullied. So what you do to use the app is you download and install it on the phone to be monitored. And by the way, this is, I mentioned before, an Android-specific app.
Okay.
Then you register on PixChecker.com, PICSChecker.com, the website, and you'll need to provide them your email address so that they can send you a daily update with an email with all the texts and pics your teen has sent that day. And you'll also need to provide them with a credit card number if you want to use the app beyond a short 3-day trial window. It's $4.99 per month per phone.
Ooh, that could get pricey if you have a lot of
this
family
is one
members.
Of the cheaper solutions we're going to talk
okay,
about.
Okay, wow.
This is something definitely where you are going to wind up paying money.
Hmm.
The app, PixChecker, has a PIN number, which you set up to connect it to your registered account. If the teen uninstalls the app will notify you via email.
Oh, okay.
And then they can't reconnect it to the account without knowing the PIN number, so they're not going to just be able to like uninstall it, reinstall it, or do something like that.
That's smart.
Also, you don't have to wait for an email. PixChecker actually provides a live secure server, so you could log into that and view what your kid is doing right at that moment.
Hmm.
Now, there are several other apps that will do this as well. Such as Mobile Spy. Mobile Spy is available for iPhone and BlackBerry also. The drawback to it is it's pricier. They're asking $50 per quarter or $200 per year.
Yeah, the price is ridiculous.
Under lockdown. My Mobile Watchdog is another Android app. This one is $4.95 a month. I noticed most of the Android market reviews for this app were really poor.
Mm.
And then I took a closer look and most of the negative reviews were from frustrated teens. So that's going to be a point in its favor, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Although
this is terrible. Mom keeps watching what I'm doing.
Yeah. Although some of them were like, this is how you work around it. So, and that's going to be a possibility with especially on Android with any of these apps. If your kid is tech savvy enough, they might figure out how to work around it.
Yeah, that's what, that was my teen voice. That's what teen voice teens sound like these days.
You could do that.
No, that was terrible. Now, you'll note, of course, that we've mostly been discussing Android apps here. Monitoring text on iPhone is harder unless you jailbreak it. Mobile Spy, like you mentioned, I looked into that one, and it is only available, or it only works on a jailbroken iPhone.
Oh, okay.
One suggestion, though, with iPhone, what you can do is to make sure that your teen's iPhone is connected to iCloud. With iCloud, it can be used to share iMessage messages. And then there's PhotoStream, which will auto-upload any picture taken on the iPhone to iCloud. So you'll get that stream of pictures, so cool. You'll see. And again, you'll want to mention to your kid that, you know, hi, I'm going to get a copy of every picture you take. So you might want to think about that when you take pictures of certain things.
Yeah.
So with those two combined, you can kind of keep an eye on what your teen is texting or taking pictures of. And, you know, if you want to get really underhanded, you could pose as one of their friends and then use Find My Friend to get their current location as well.
Yeah, true. But we always recommend that you kind of be upfront with your kid about this stuff.
That's like, the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a final note. If you go into the Android market and search for something like, quote, unquote, Tech Spy, hundreds of apps are going to come up. And most of them looked pretty sketchy in the first place to me, but they could also actually be dangerous. Mm. The Android market is not as tightly controlled as the iPhone App Store. So there are, in fact, bad apps out there that are buggy or just plain malware. How do you know that random spyware app you just installed won't just crash your phone, or worse, that it won't report your kid's texts and location to some stranger on the internet?
Yeah.
You don't. So read the reviews, do some research, look the app up on Google, see what people had to say about it before installing, if it's not one of the apps that we mentioned here.
Yeah, so of those, which would be your definite recommendation?
Like I said, I think...
PixChecker?
PixChecker seems, like a pretty legit thing, and it definitely was the best bang for the buck.
Yeah, so. But no, doesn't seem to be any free option.
It's not that I could see. Somebody did suggest that, and this would be getting more technical, but you could sign up so that your texts send through Google Voice, and then if you had the password to the Google Voice account, you would be able to see whatever texts were being sent.
Yeah, that's true. That would work.
That wouldn't help you with the picture problem, though. Well, unless they were texting the pictures, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, so that's one option, but again, that they would have, you would have to say, hey, you're going to use Google Voice to send your texts, and I'm going to monitor it.
Yeah, sure. But that doesn't prevent them from deleting them on Google Voice.
No,
of course,
it does
you could
not.
Do that. Well, we got another email from Amber. Can you grab that one?
Sure. Amber asks, why can I sometimes share some status updates on Facebook, but not others? Thanks.
Well, thanks for your email, Amber. It depends on your friend's privacy settings. Actually, this would make a great debunkable segment.
It would.
So here we go. Well, let's do a debunkable segment. So a lot of people have been posting on their Facebook statuses recently, and it goes something like this.
To all my contacts, friends, I request from you that with the recent changes in Facebook, now anyone can see things from people who are not in your contacts list, just because a contact of yours makes a comment or likes in some activity of that person. I do not want people to contact me and would like that they do not read and see all my comments and stuff. But I cannot change this myself because Facebook has configured it this way. But you can do it for me. Please place your mouse over my name above. Do not click. A window will appear and move the mouse on friends, also without clicking. And then down to settings. Click here and a list will appear. Click comments and like, and it would thereby remove the check. Yeah? By doing this, my activity amongst my friends and my family does not become public. 1,000 thanks. And that's all in caps.
Yeah.
Paste this on your wall for your contacts if you care about your privacy.
Yeah, now back in December, I saw this posted on at least a dozen people's feeds on the news feed. But here's the thing. It's completely untrue. And it's a complete waste of your friend's time.
Really?
Yeah. Now, it used to be a default setting at one point on Facebook that your posts were only shown to your friends and friends of your friends. So if you didn't do anything, it would go to your friends and your friends of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've all played, you know, 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Six, actually.
Six? Yeah. Oh, five, six. It doesn't matter.
It matters to Kevin Bacon.
Well, now that he's in that new show, I'm sure it's down to five.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But all of your friends and their friends can easily add up to several thousand people, depending on how many friends you and they have.
True.
However, that's not even a default setting anymore. And even back then, what happens to your posts on Facebook is completely under your control. And we can talk about, you know, oh, Facebook changes their privacy settings and that mm-hmm. makes things crazy. But the reality is you do have control over what happens to it if you choose to control it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you take no action, then the default setting is actually that you're shared with everyone on Facebook. It just goes out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you set your privacy settings to friends, only your friends can see your post.
Right.
Even if one of your friends likes your post, that doesn't mean that all of their friends will be able to see it.
No.
It only means that all of your friends will be able to see that one of your friends liked it. I mean, how ridiculous would it be if your friends decided whether or not your posts were private or public?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the idea that you're going to go and each of your friends has to go in and decide, you know, oh, this is public, this is private. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to make it so that only friends can see your posts, just click the settings gear icon in the top right corner and click to open the privacy settings menu and then change the who can see your posts options to friends. Now only your friends will be able to see what you post on your Facebook status updates. If someone wanders to your Facebook profile, they won't be able to see what you have posted.
Right. And I've done that several times. I'll just be like, who is this that commented on something? And I'll go to their page. All of their posts are private.
Mm-hmm.
Or just to their friends. Well, I can't see anything.
Yep.
And obviously one of my friends must have liked something that they posted at some point. And if that were true, what the viral post is saying, I'd be able to see that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and the irony is what happens when you do follow those directions is, let's say I see yours and you had posted this, which you wouldn't do, but let's say you did. If I went in there and followed these directions, now I wouldn't see anything that you posted. It doesn't change what everyone else can see. It changes what I can see of your stuff.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to Amber's question, why can I sometimes share some status updates on Facebook but not others? Well, if you post something on Facebook with the privacy settings set to friends only, your friends can't share your post. Same thing is true in reverse. If one of your friends posts something with the privacy setting set to friends, you can't share what they've posted.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense, right? I mean, if your friend could turn around and share something with the world that you didn't want shared with the world, that would kind of defeat the purpose, right?
Exactly. And the idea that you would have to depend on every single one of your friends to set your privacy settings to friends only is just ridiculous. What your friends do on their Facebook profile has no effect on you.
Exactly. Except...
Except what, Ray?
Well, here's the thing. The Facebook privacy settings do effectively prevent your post from being shared through the official sharing method.
True.
But nothing is preventing someone from copying and pasting what you said and posting it on their wall.
Well, there's that.
And sharing that with the world. So folks still need to use common sense.
Yeah. The internet is kind of the new high school.
Yeah.
Everyone's expectation of privacy on the internet should be zero. Every system can and likely will be hacked at some point.
Right. And every system's privacy settings can be set up incorrectly. Or you just might end up accidentally posting something publicly that you meant to be a private message. You know, ask Anthony Weiner if you don't believe me. Or just Google accidental Facebook posts.
Oh yeah, there are blogs for these things. So basically, a good rule of thumb is assume that everything you post on the internet or type on your keyboard can and might be used against you. If not in a court of law, at least to embarrass you publicly.
Yep. So now, there are a couple of great articles on Lifehacker and even one on USA Today that Kim Komando wrote on how to set up your Facebook settings.
Okay.
And we'll include that in today's episode show notes. All right. Well, we got enough time for another question, I think. Keith writes, my BlackBerry can be set to automatically power on at a certain time. You can do the same thing for powering off. Can the Samsung Galaxy S3 do this? You've got an S3.
I do have an S3 and I love it. Thanks for the question, Keith. So here's the real short answer. No.
Oh.
When the Galaxy S3 is off, it's off. Apps won't run. Alarms don't go off. It's just a chunk of plastic and Gorilla Glass. Now, I have never used a BlackBerry, but I presume the reason you would want this feature that you're describing is either to conserve battery life or to silence your phone at night.
Oh,
now, okay. You can still do those things on that Galaxy S3. It just doesn't require turning off the phone.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
Yeah. There are several free Android apps that would allow you to set up a customized schedules to do any of the following. Turn off your ringer, turn off 3G, 4G data, turn off Wi-Fi, turn off phone calls entirely, as well as many, many other settings. A really straightforward app for this that I've discovered is Monocube's Power Schedule.
Hmm.
I use this app to set up a schedule where on weeknights only, the ringer is turned off automatically at 12 a.m. and back on at 6 a.m. So from the middle of the night, 6 a.m., I won't hear any phone calls. If you don't mind getting technical and spending some money on an app, you can get much, much fancier. There's an Android app called Tasker, which basically allows you to turn on all kind or off all kinds of settings, including battery and ringer settings. And that can be based on a variety of events. This includes a nightly schedule, whether you're connected to a certain Wi-Fi network, whether the phone detects that you are at home or at work. And these are just a few options. This is a powerful app. The Galaxy S3 also has an NFC chip inside it. Now, NFC stands for Near Field Communications.
Right.
The idea is that you can swipe your GS3 over a special type of chip called a tactile, which you can actually just like stick to a flat surface anywhere, or another phone, and something happens. You probably are wondering how this is relevant to you, Keith. Well, you could use this to activate custom settings depending on the phone's location.
Oh.
Imagine you putting a tactile on your bedside table, and then you set up a custom profile that will turn the ringer off and put the phone into extreme power saving mode. And then Tasker allows you to set the phone so that when you touch the tactile by your bed, your special nighttime profile is activated. And when you wake up in the morning, touch the tile again and it would deactivate. Now, this is absolutely more complex than most users are going to want to get.
Yeah.
But I just thought people should know about it. If you're thinking about buying a GS3, Keith, you should realize that it's a powerful phone and it has a ton of customization options. A lot of people probably never know that their GS3 can do stuff like this. A lot of people may never want to do it. But if you're thinking of shelling out for a GS3 or you already own a GS3, you should realize that you have the power. This thing can really be customized to do almost anything you want to do.
Except automatically power back on at a certain time.
Well, besides that.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of fun. Now, on iPhone, there's a similar setting built in called Do Not Disturb mode, which you just go to your settings app and then tick the little toggle off called that says Do Not Disturb. And you can actually program it to turn on and off at certain times, schedule it.
Do Not Disturb turn on and off or the iPhone turn on?
No, not turning the iPhone on and off, just the Do Not Disturb mode. So you can set it at certain times. And you can also set it to where your favorites, the contacts you have listed in your favorites, that they will ring through even if you are on Do Not Disturb mode. And you can set it where it'll automatically ring through if someone calls two times in a row or three times in a row.
Nice.
That's kind of useful.
That is useful.
Well, we got another question here from James. Can you grab that one?
All right. James writes, "What happened to the bleeping start button? I just picked up a new laptop, has Windows 8, does not have the start button. Why are they doing this to us? What do I do about it? My wife and I are hating Windows 8. Trying to help a neighbor load a couple of programs on from the CD DVD drive. Couldn't figure out how to do it. Sigh."
All right. Well, I wanted to like Windows 8, and we've talked about this before. It actually makes me a little nauseous. and we could talk about why, and maybe we'll jump back into that. But what do you do about it? That's what I'd like to talk about real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it. That's the way Windows is going. Or you could get a Mac. Or, I mean, that fixes the problem. Or a Chromebook, or, you know, can install Linux on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or there are some apps that will give you a start menu.
Yeah.
And we'll include some links to that. But as far as the CD-ROM goes, let me jump back. The apps will install a start menu that will work kind of like Windows 7.
Right.
So it gives you that functionality back a little bit.
You'll be swimming upstream, though, because Microsoft, you know, they're not – there's no secret start button hidden away there that somebody can reactivate. They want you to use this new
interface. And there's still a start button. The button's still on the keyboard. It just opens up a different type of menu now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you did mention, though, that the CD-ROM was an issue. It should automatically open a dialog box when you insert a CD or DVD into the computer that's running Windows 8. Then you'll just click on that dialog box to decide what you want to do to it next. Now, if that doesn't happen, you can still navigate to the drive in File Explorer. It's not as obvious as it was with previous versions of Windows, but according to the Microsoft website, you open File Explorer by swiping up from the right edge of the screen, tapping search, or if you're using a mouse, pointing to the upper right corner of the screen and moving to the mouse pointer down and then clicking search. So you got some options there that should take care of it for you. Well, now it's time for a new segment of the show that we're calling Kickable.
All right, Ray. So what is Kickable? It sounds like we're about to break into kung fu fighting.
I wish. I can't kung fu fight. Well, Tom, you've heard of Kickstarter, right?
Of course, Ray. That's the crowdfunding website where artists and entrepreneurs get people to pledge to support their ideas in exchange for rewards. And, you know, some are as small as a heartfelt thank you. And others are as large as several copies of the art or product. and the artist or entrepreneur decides what the fundraising goal is, and if they receive enough pledges, they get the funding. But if they don't reach their goal, they get nothing.
That's right, Tom. Well, there have been, of course, several great success stories that have come out of Kickstarter, such as the Ouya, which was the open source video game console. It raised about $8.6 million, which is pretty good.
Since that's decent.
Yeah, their goal was only $950,000.
Wow.
So they did pretty good. And there was the Pebble, which was the e-paper smartwatch that connects with your iPhone or Android phone, so you can see your text messages and caller IDs and emails on your watch. And that one raised over $10.2 million, which is really great because their goal was only $100,000.
Wow, yeah. That's 100 times your goal.
Yep. So there's also Indiegogo.
Yeah, and it's similar to Kickstarter. It's a crowdfunding website, but unlike Kickstarter, they have a flexible funding option.
Right.
So if you don't reach your goal, you can still get the amount that you did raise. Also, with Kickstarter, you have to have a project that you want to fund. But Indiegogo, you can decide what you want to raise money for, whatever, you know.
Yeah, pretty much whatever you want to do. With Indiegogo, though, you do have it where if you do the flexible funding option, you get less.
Yeah.
They kind of take a bigger chunk.
Oh, okay.
So you still have a motivation to hit your goal and to promote it. But Indiegogo, one of the most famous Indiegogo campaigns happened when a video was uploaded to YouTube of the school bus attendant, Karen Klein, who was being viciously bullied verbally and physically by middle schoolers.
Jeez.
And someone on the internet saw the video and decided to raise some money, you know, just like $5,000 for her so that she could take a well-deserved vacation. And they ended up raising over $700,000 for her.
Oh, gosh. Well, that must have been one heck of a vacation. Matthew Inman, the internet comic strip creator best known for The Oatmeal, also had a very successful Indiegogo campaign.
That's right.
Which he called Let's Build a Gosh Darn Tesla Museum.
I don't remember it being like that.
Yeah, Inman's humor is a bit crass, so it wasn't actually called Let's Build a Gosh Darn Tesla Museum. Use your imagination, but we're trying to keep it family friendly here.
Yeah.
So. But Inman is quite a Nikola Tesla fan, and he was pretty upset there wasn't a museum for all the awesome things that Tesla had created. So he worked with the landlord that owned the property that Tesla's last laboratory before he died was built on. The state of New York actually offered a matching grant of up to $850,000 to buy the property. So Inman tried to raise at least $850,000 to buy the land. He ended up raising over almost $1.4 million. So
yeah,
with the matching grant, he ended up with over $2.2 million. So that's a pretty good amount for Indiegogo.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people kind of, when they saw $850,000 for this property, they were like, ooh, I don't know if he's going to hit it. And then he blew past it in one day.
Wow.
I think it was one day. I can't vouch for that. But I know it was really, really short.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of awesome things happening on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. But what I've found is that I usually don't find out about them until after they've already happened and they're over.
True.
And that's really sad, especially with some of the products. You know, like one of the rewards is you get the product. So, like the Pebble, I missed out on getting it at the cheap price at the Kickstarter because I didn't find out about it until it was already closed. So what I want us to do is to keep an eye on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And when there is really cool stuff happening on there, we'll let you guys know. So Kickable won't be every week segment, but we'll do it periodically as cool stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, what is the coolest thing that you've seen lately in the crowdsourcing world, Tom?
Oh, that's a loaded question. There's a lot of really neat things out there right now. One of them is the CST-01, which is being built as the world's thinnest watch. And this is kind of a cool thing these guys have come up with, just two guys. They have an etched flexible metal band, which they have mounted an e-ink display on.
Ooh, interesting.
And it's a watch. If you see it, you really should see it, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes.
It looks
very stylish, minimalist.
Yeah.
And it's thin. It
does like a bracelet.
Watch. Yeah, it's like a bracelet, except it happens to actually have the time on it done with e-ink. So that's a really cool concept. And that's one, as you mentioned, they say when it comes out, it's going to retail for more than $170. But if you pledge $99, you'll get one once they hit their goal.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Which actually they already have. So just go do it.
Yeah.
You got 33 days left to sign up as of recording.
Yeah. So they've got 608,738 pledged of a $200,000 goal. Now, this has a screen similar to what the Pebble had.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have the interactivity that
right.
the Pebble has.
It's just a watch.
It's a watch. And
tells the time.
I know, it's kind of crazy because I'm like, well, if it doesn't do anything, why do I want to get it? because I don't wear a watch. But that is, I like it. I think that's cool.
Stylish.
And obviously people are interested in it because, man, they've raised over $500,000 already.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that I saw that really caught my attention, and they've actually already raised over their goal, is called Synapse.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Bluetooth bone conduction headset.
Okay, but...
And it goes in your hat.
In your hat?
In your hat, yeah. The way it works is through your Bluetooth on your mobile phone or your PC or whatever, it transmits the sound to your bone. So it rests against your skull in your hat. Like you put your hat on and it touches your skull. And you can actually hear music that way.
Oh, really?
And I don't know what it is. I've always been fascinated by this type of technology.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago, I guess it wasn't that long, maybe like 5 years ago, I heard about this like DARPA project that they were doing with a dental implant.
Mm-hmm.
And with the dental implant, they could transmit sound to your teeth and you could hear it through your bones in your skull.
Yeah, well, you know, I pick up the government signals in my tooth fillings.
I'll start calling you Lucille Ball. Did you ever hear that story?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
about how she was hearing the communists.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I've always thought that type of technology was interesting, you know, for you to be able to hear something, but your ears actually not be covered. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we're here with our big headsets in the studio or earbuds or whatever. And that actually, it's really cool because one of the pictures they show is someone driving or cycling and they've got their hat on so they can hear the music, but their ears are still open so they can hear what's going on around them.
Yeah.
And I've
yeah,
always liked cool. that. I don't like my hearing being completely cut off by the device that I'm listening to.
Yeah, especially now when you're out riding a bike.
Oh, yeah, that's like terrible.
That. You need to be aware of your surroundings.
But, you know, combine that with a throat mic, and that's like the perfect covert ops mm-hmm, device. Mm-hmm. You can hear without speakers, and you can talk, you know, really just with a whisper.
That's a very cool project.
It's a neat idea. They're doing it for, let's see, how much do you have to pay to get it? Looks like $50 for the self-install kit.
You provide the hat, and they provide the thing that goes inside the hat?
Yep. Nice. Yeah. And it's a little attachment that goes in there with a little battery and hooks up with a Bluetooth. So it's kind of neat. We'll see if it works out. Hopefully it becomes popular enough for them to actually make it. The only thing that bothers me is they have a $20,000 goal.
Mm-hmm.
And for this type of product, it just seems like it needs more behind it to get that to market.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they've already done all their research and development for it because they're ready to produce it. It's just according to how much they have to get to be able to
manufacture.
Yeah. Yeah. Got another one?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, I got two actually. One is the Stick and Find.
Okay.
It is another Bluetooth device, and it's a location sticker. So kind of like you were talking about the Tektiles with Samsung.
Right.
But not exactly. With the Stick and Find, you stick a sticker. It's about the size of like 3/4 stacked together.
Okay.
2 or 3/4 stacked together. And you stick it on your stuff, like, I don't know, your laptop or your phone or something like that.
My car keys.
Car keys. There's actually one that has a little car key loop that you can hook it up to. And what it does is you can find your stuff
mm-hmm.
if you lose it. So you pull up an app on iOS or on Android, and it shows a little radar-looking device, and it shows you approximately how far away it is.
Cool.
So you can just kind of walk around until you get closer and closer to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun. They actually have it.
Hey, I'm going to get one of those for my cat.
For when next time he jumps out the window?
Yeah.
they actually have a disclaimer on there, because it looks like radar to tell you directionals.
Uh-huh.
And Bluetooth doesn't really give directionals, so it's, you know, basically this is just distance.
You're this far from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you walk away from it and it gets, or you walk one direction and it gets farther away, well, you're going the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Turn around. So that is a really neat device. For $35, you can get two of the stickers. So not terrible.
No.
They're planning on retailing it for $49.95 for two. So that's a decent discount.
Yeah.
So anything? Very cool. Anything? Have you found something that you like?
Well, There is the GCW. There's a lot of these right now, actually, these kind of open source gaming things people are coming out with. There was the Ouya, which you already mentioned.
Right.
Very popular. NVIDIA's working on the Shield. I guess that's not really open source. But Valve actually is going to make a Steam box. We've talked about Steam on here before, the sort of the market for PC downloadable games. And they're actually going to make a Linux-powered box that you can hook up to your television. And so,
that one looks really cool.
Yeah. But the this one is the GCW Zero, and it kind of looks like just an old-school handheld game device.
Reminds me of the Game Gear.
Yeah.
The Sega Game Gear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to think about this one. It is getting popular. I mean, it as of right now, it's at $106,000 out of a $130,000 goal. But the thing is, when I read through it, it's going to have 512 megabytes of RAM, 16 gig of internal storage. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't even have the operating system locked down.
They say they're going to run Linux down here.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I thought they're building a special distribution of Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool.
They say the idea is to give you full control. You can run whatever you want on it. Because people really like to hack this stuff. Gosh, if you don't allow people to install Linux, they will install Linux anywhere.
No, of course.
Linux people are just like, I'm going to install it on my watch.
Yeah. I guess I just expected that they would do Android for this because it's already built for mobile.
True.
I mean, Ubuntu is putting
it out on phone. The Steam box is also using Linux.
That's true.
And you got to remember, Android is a flavor of Linux.
That's true.
I mean, it's not really, they're cousins at least, possibly siblings.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, there was one other one that I really liked. And that is the meter plug.
Meter plug.
Now, this is a small device that you plug your an appliance into.
Uh-huh.
And then you plug that into the wall.
Yeah.
And over Bluetooth, you can see how much that device is actually using electricity.
Very cool.
So if something is in standby mode, like your DVD or VCR, if you still got one of those, or your TV or whatever.
A Blu-ray player, Ray.
Yeah. Blu-ray player. You can see how much it's actually spending in electricity. So that is really cool. I like that a lot.
That is very cool. That looks great.
And it works on, I believe, on iPhone. I see the iPhones they have on the thing. It also works on Android as well. So you can see it right there on your phone how much. So it's something that you could use to kind of get an eye for, let me just shut this off or unplug it so I'm stop wasting electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is $50 for one of them. They had they do actually still have an early bird special for $45, so not a huge discount.
This is a really interesting bit that they wrote on their page. I just want to read this.
Mm-hmm.
They say, what is vampire power? Your appliances may be acting like vampires, sucking up and consuming energy even when the power is switched off. This is what we call vampire power. If you leave your Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 on, it continues to consume roughly 170 watts of power 24/7. And if you run the math, that's $220 per year.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Pretty serious.
Yeah, it can add up.
They were testing with their meter plug, and they found that their 50-inch Sony LED TV consumes $18.25 per year on standby.
Wow.
Not when it's running, on standby. Hmm. So, that's kind of interesting that you could really see what your appliances actually cost you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, let's see. That's all that I've seen lately.
Yeah.
Now, if you find something on Indiegogo or Kickable, let us know.
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter.
This is Kickable. That's Kickstarter.
Right. I'll keep them straight. Email us at kickable@deemable.com or questions@deemable.com. Basically, anything at deemable.com, we'll get it. Or you can call us at 1-888-972-9868 and let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll deal with it then.
Cool.
All right. Well, that is all the time that we have for today. Thanks so much for your emails, and keep them coming. Email us at questions@deemable.com, or better yet, call us and tell us your tech problems at 1-888-972-9868. And of course, if you haven't already, subscribe to the show, search for Deemable Tech on iTunes, or point your favorite podcast app to dmbl.co/pod. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com. Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm taking a drink. You could have given me just one more second on that. All right.
I thought I was going to get you right at the perfect timing.